This podcast is proudly brought to you by Infinity Media, incubating innovative businesses in the media industry.
Hi, I'm Gordon Muller. I'm the guru in the Doc and Guru podcast. Thanks for being with us. For those of you who don't know me, I've spent over 40 years in the media industry in South Africa and pretty much made it my home, my life, my passion. I have other passions, unfortunately, for my sins. I'm an Arsenal supporter and a Sharks supporter, so we're going to do pretty much everything on the show as it pertains to media, marketing and money, but we don't take jokes about Arsenal or the Sharks.
I'm Doug Mateus, the doc on the show. And again, for those of you who don't know me, I spent 30 years in various companies in South Africa running different marketing functions. And the last job I had, I was privileged enough to work with a team that took the brand to the fastest growing brand in South Africa in 2018 with a 47% year-on-year growth. So that was a great achievement for the team and I'm really proud of that. From a personal point of view, I do a little bit of cycling and also snow skiing. So we quite enjoy that. But again, today's discussion is around all things marketing and media.
Yep, that's right, Doc. All things marketing and media. No subject too big, no topic too small, no subject too hot to handle. Please get in touch with us on our Facebook page, follow us, like us, whatever it takes. We would love you to be involved with the show, and we really want to make it as inclusive and as energetic as I know this industry is capable of.
Hey Gordon, how's it going?
Well, Doc, I'm sitting in Joburg at about 1,800 meters. I think you've got a bit of elevation on me.
Gordon, we don't often do a podcast from location, but I'm at 3,000 meters in the Austrian Alps on a very iconic setting, which we'll get into right now with a very, very special guest, which we'll introduce very shortly. So yeah, you know, I'm away on a little bit of holiday and throwing in our weekly podcast. We can't miss that. So today is really a special day and I hope our listeners enjoy it.
Well, not only are you on a holiday, but you're in the front line of the battle against Spectre, if I'm not mistaken, Doc. I'm looking forward to you to create world harmony.
Well, we got to fight the bad guys, but I mean, let's get straight into it, Gordon. I mean, I'm at the iconic setting of one of the settings of the movie in 2015, Spectre, the James Bond franchise, very famous, everyone knows it. And I mean, a very special guest next to me is Andreas Zunt. Andreas, thanks very much, exhibition manager, for a fantastic exhibition I've just walked through now, set in the mountain right next to one of the scenes from the Bond movie. Andreas, thanks for your time. Really appreciate it.
I appreciate it too. It's very nice to have you here.
Yeah, thanks. And I mean, you know, just from our point of view, I mean, you know, taking an iconic franchise like 007, it's just so well known. It's so iconic for many, many different reasons, one of which is the settings. You know, they're just out of the world settings, and then marrying it with such a well-known ski resort like Solden in Austria in the Alps. I mean, it's fantastic. So let's just talk a little bit about the background. How did it come about? How was Solden chosen? And let's talk about the excitement of that time. So we go back to 2015 when the shooting started.
We had to go back to 2014 because the location scouts were flying around the Alps all over Europe. Mm. They just saw the Ice Cube building. Mm. And we opened it in December of 13. So it was really, really new, and they saw it blinking in the sun, whatever. And it was so interesting for them. So they came to look what it is.
Yeah.
Because they don't thought we have to go to Sölden, we have to go to Austria, wherever. They're European Alps and they're really great. And so we got really, it was really the best for us because nobody was thinking about it. And our boss, Jack Falkner, he knows as a Bond fan, he knows also from other countries, because in Switzerland was also a cable car with a Bond exhibition, not like us, ours, but nearly, it was in the 70s, I think.
Yeah.
And he said, if Bond came to you, don't ask, what do I want from me? So open your arms and he's to be welcome. And they came once in your lifetime.
Yeah.
And he is a Bond fan and he knows everything and he was talking to them. And at the first moment, I think, I don't know it exactly, but I think this was the first moment the deal was done.
Yeah. On the view of the queue. And again, Gordon, just for our, our listeners out there. And I mean, I'd urge you to go look up the Q restaurant. It's a very famous landmark now in the region. A glass, almost a square on the side of a mountain. And as Andrea said, built as a restaurant. And it is a restaurant. In fact, we're sitting in the restaurant right now. But that then was transformed, Gordon, into the bad guy's clinic, where obviously you had to torture Bond for some stage and then Bond escaped, etc. But I mean, Andreas can take us through that story in a little bit more detail.
And just also coming back to the starting date for it all. I know Sam Mendes in trying to plot Spectre realized that he had to come up with something to top Skyfall in terms of the visuals and just the extraordinary nature of the backdrop. And that's how they settled on Solden. So yeah, you're right. It was a good year or two in the planning, but they visualized it right there in the Austrian Alps.
And I mean, Andreas, just talking, besides the Q restaurant, which was the starting point and I guess what caught the eye, there were a few other elements that were almost in the mind of the director and the producer of the movie obligatory for this particular scene, the road, the Alps, etc.
It was also, of course, the mountain station from the cable car, because it's also designed. Mm. It's the same architect who made also the ice cream restaurant. And this was this amazing point. And then they had, of course, a screening, and they know what they do, but they planned a little bit things, not exactly as they were in the book, because we're now on this place, and then you can check, oh, there's also a street we can use. We can use the tunnel, we can use the cable car. Mm. And so they rewrited it a little bit. Mm. It was not 100% fixed, and so they were directly on our place. And then they said, okay, let's do this scene again and this scene again.
Yeah. And I guess, you know, just, you know, having not made a movie, but certainly been part of many, many adverts through the years, we know how long it takes to shoot, reshoot, get the angles right, redo that, take that. I mean, it's amazing what must go into a Bond movie of this proportion. And certainly also, Gordon, the outdoor scenes, you know, you can try to control. I'm looking outside now, there's light snow, but I mean, I don't know what the conditions were at that time, whether it was heavy snowfall and how that would have affected it. But I mean, it's also the road. I mean, it's amazing, Gordon, coming up the, you know, the cable car, you almost, there's almost that inner child of you that you look and you, you know, in a strange way, you want to be in that moment of James Bond. You see the actual road, you know, you see the Land Rovers, you see the artifacts from that movie. So it's quite amazing, that magnetism, I guess, and what you were saying, your CEO spoke about that time. When Bond arrives, it's a once-in-a-lifetime experience.
Yeah, and as they were here, the weather was also bad, the weather was good, everything, because the whole scenes, the certain scenes, they were built in 2 months.
Yeah.
There were 15 filming days in 2 months, and from those 15 filming days, they got 10 to 12 minutes of film. Yeah. And so you have, of course, you have to check the weather, you have to check the roads and everything. And if you look at the movies, you can see the weather was nearly perfect.
Yeah.
And for example, there were 200 people just on this place for a very small scene, because in the scene, in the movie, you can see maybe two or three actors and a few background people, and there were 200 film people on the top of the mountain just for this small scene.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think we know that, Gordon, I mean, from our experience, just in terms of the crew and the cast and the extras and the people, just on a what would normally become a 30, 45 or 60-second television commercial. I mean, this is a full-length, massive Bond movie that has to be done correctly. So, again, but I think, you know, the reason why we're doing today's podcast, Andreas, is to talk about tourism and to talk specifically about destination branding, Gordon. I mean, there's so many iconic cities in the world that have things that are sometimes natural wonders. Sable Mountain is an example of that in Cape Town. And then things like, you know, this particular one that is now man-made but has become iconic in its genre. So, again, you know, just for our listeners thinking about the lesson for the day is around destination market, about making your destination even more attractive. Which leads me to the next question. Andreas, let's talk about the excitement of the people, the citizens of the region. Was there great excitement at the time when it was announced that Solden was chosen as a venue, and how's it been received?
It was from the beginning, Jack Parker was thinking about to make something after the movie scenes. He was talking with them and said, if you got the movies, if it's finished, we want to do whatever. Mm. And then, of course, they were starting with planning and thinking about it. And all those crazy guys, it was the architecture, it was also Neil Kellow, as the art director of the last five Bond movies, and all the Bond people, they were talking about it, and they were thinking about it, of course. What can you make? there were a few people who said you can also make this exhibition on the valley. And it wouldn't really work in the valley because you have to go on the original place where the movie scene. You can make it into a mountain, also in the valley, so you don't have to go with cable car up. It wouldn't be the same. You have to do it on this iconic place because you can drive it the same gondola. People are waiting at the gondola till the gondola with the number 7 is here because in the movie is the number 7. And they are in the same place. You can stay in the same place. You can stay in the office where Lea Seydoux has been. And they like it. There are so many fans all over the world and also the people from the valley. Of course, people say, yes, you don't have to do it. You can do it. Why did you do it? Because it's in the nature. But it's really as for the whole region here. It's great. It's really great.
Yeah. Thanks.
You're listening to The Doc and the Guru, proudly brought to you by Infinity Media.
For me as a traditionalist, talking about cable cars, I'd be looking not so much for the number 7, but I'd be looking for the teeth marks in the cable from The Spy Who Loved Me and Moonraker where Jaws had a nibble at it. So have you got any Jaws cables there for me?
you know what's quite interesting, Gordon, and I've just had the benefit of going through this world-class exhibition now. You know, they've actually got artifacts, Andreas, from other Bond movies. So it's quite interesting, Gordon. It's not just Spectre, and obviously there's the Omega watch and artifacts from Spectre. But I mean, it's interesting to look at some of the ski suits and how it's changed through the years, the ski goggles, from different scenes that were shot around the world at different ski locations. And also the guns and the gadgets and all the technology. So, I mean, if you ever get a chance to our listeners to get out to Solden into Austria, it's well worth it, And as Andreas says, even if you just lose yourself in that imagination and that moment of the magic, even if you're not a skier, you come up on the cable car and you imagine it. And I can tell you now that as a family, we on a ski holiday, we're going to now watch the movie tonight. We got so into it. We said, now let's watch the movie.
There's so many people that watch it before.
Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely. And then they have to watch it again
because
now you're on the place and you can say, that's the place I've been. It's really, really amazing. There's so many people that like it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, of course, the talking about the watch. I mean, obviously the Omega watch, and if I'm not mistaken, Omega are also sponsors of the Solden exhibition per se. But that for me was an iconic piece of advertising in 2015 with Daniel Craig. It kind of broke the mold. I mean, there was always a product placements in Bond going all the way back to Aston Martin's and BMW 3 Series. But the Omega watch has become iconic or built on its own iconic status within the Bond framework, which I think is a marvelous case study in itself.
Yeah, and I think, Gordon, just looking, and I mean, our viewers, Bogner is the kit supplier, and we're not going to give an unnecessary pun, but the point of the story is these are world-class brands that, the museum and the exhibition have partnered with. Jaguar, Swarovski, Bogner, Omega, etc. And the nice part about it, Gordon, as marketers, we understand that halo effect, cool by association. You want to wear good looking stuff. You think you look a little bit better. You stand a bit better. You feel a bit better about life. And I think it's all of that stuff. And so a lot of that stuff has been brought through the franchise in terms of product placement and people, maybe not everyone can afford an Aston Martin or maybe afford an Omega, but certainly you aspire to that. And that's certainly that whole aura of the James Bond and captured in the museum again that I've just gone through now. And you get the sense of out and out quality, and out perfection in that everything works. The screening is all done perfectly, and the props. And I mean, there's that scene of Bond landing the light aircraft and the wings break off, and it goes through the barn. Now the fuselage and bits of that is in the thing, as with the Land Rovers. And again, iconic, the Defender and the Sport, of that time that came through. So yeah, make no excuse for classy product placement in the franchise and certainly in the museum as well.
Yeah, and talking about product placement and merchandising, obviously, Doc, I'm quite excited about the prospect of my souvenir that you're going to be bringing back for me. I have my eye. I mean, I know that one of the exhibits is actually the golden gun from The Man with the Golden Gun. So you talked about tasteful and iconic, makes you feel and walk a bit taller. I'm just saying, Doc, of course, you know that The Man with the Golden Gun had three nipples. So I think a fake nipple would be quite handy if there's any of those in stock.
I was hoping to get you a bottled martini that we can shake and not stir when we get home. But we'll have to try and find you a fake nipple. Andreas, as we move towards the end of our show, you know, I just want to say thank you very much. And again, you know, I want to reiterate the point to our listeners. This is what happens when you have imagination. You seize the moment. You know, the moment could have been sold and shot X amount of scenes, and that's fantastic. And it'll always live in the memory banks. But, you know, you guys and the team had the foresight to build something that has got longevity, that's got memories far beyond the movie, and maybe we'll get new viewers in, get new fans of Bond who perhaps are not Bond. And that's, I think, the thing with museums, Gordon, is to preserve some of that good, not just for history's sake, but also for tomorrow, you know, is to look at it and say, and I think just to other cities and looking at South Africa, you know, looking at some of the stuff that we've done well and some of the stuff we've done badly, you know, some of the heritage we've let go through whatever reason, you know, let's rather try and find that. And not just for yesterday, but also for tomorrow. And today is an example of that, you know. I walked through there energized and excited about just about what is possible. You know, you look at the architecture, the imagination, the engineering, the sponsorship funds, the funding, the ongoing, the commercialized, all of those things are there. But it's done professionally, Gordon. It's a business that the guys are running. This isn't just a hobby that they do in their spare time, you know. And that's the message, you know, for people out there. If you really want to do it and you've got something, a really valuable story to tell, don't be shy to tell your story.
Absolutely, and I think your timing in hosting this, and once again, thanks, Andreas, for being there. It's really good because it's in the week that you've been away, Doc, that the Joburg City Council or the Gauteng municipals combined are looking at trying to create some sort of a tourist attraction in Johannesburg by building, in inverted commas, our local equivalent of what would be an Eiffel Tower. And that just seems like a skin drop. There's no latent association with it, you know. And I think this is what I love about it is, yes, the movie was chosen to be shot there, but the subsequent growth is organic. It's real, you know. It wasn't supplanted in there. So we've got to look for our naturally occurring tourist attractions and build on those, not to try and transplant something into the space which has no sort of natural intuitive affinity.
Absolutely, Gordon. I think, you know, specifically now on the tail end of COVID, I mean, we've all suffered. I mean, Andreas and I were chatting off air. Obviously, they've been closed for 2 years, as most of the world has been. We know that to be the case. We've suffered as a country, but now's the time to get your act together. In fact, now's not the time. You should have got your act together for the time of COVID when you were doing nothing. But let's not be too harsh now. But I mean, let's get the act together. Let's get the tourism. And my favorite, the thing that disappoints me the most, I think, is the Springbok Rugby Museum that you know in the waterfront that we don't have anymore. Now, I can't understand how, as world champions, we can't sustain a rugby museum when these guys put something 3,000 meters on the side of a mountain. You know, this is my point. Now, I don't want to go off on a rant because I'm actually in a good mood and I've had a fairly good day. And I've got a ski down this mountain, so I need to be in a positive frame of mind. But the point is to SA Rugby, shame on you. You should have done better, you know. And again, to the guys here, well done. Gordon, I'm going to leave you to close us out today.
Well, yeah, I am just overwhelmed by the solitude of my office versus the vista of the Austrian Alps. So quite frankly, Doc, I don't think I'm going to close. I'm going to leave it to you. I'm just going to sit here and sulk. And to our listeners out there, thanks for joining us. And for those of us left here minding the store, don't worry about the Doc. He's okay.
Now, Gordon, just to really upset you even more, I mean, here we are now. We have a cup of coffee. Really, this is in the morning, okay? Next week,
we're
doing an on-site podcast from the Hofbräuhaus in München. Now, there, I can promise you, we are not going to be having coffee. That, I can promise you. So if you think you're in a grumpy mood now, you're going to be in a shocking mood next Friday.
I went to the Hofbräuhaus for the first time as a student back in the 70s, and I told my mate that, look, we better find an apartment about 5 minutes away from the Hofbräuhaus, which we managed to do. But strangely enough, it took us 2 hours to get back to our apartment from the Hofbräu House. And I can't figure out what actually happened on the night, but it was a long trip back. So good luck with the journey back.
It happens, Gordon. You're not the first guy. And I remember in 1980, the first half, they closed the Hofbräu House for repairs after you guys visited there. So well, so well done. Guys, enough. We're running out of time. Andreas, thanks again for your time. I really, really, really appreciate it. Thank you so much for hosting us in this fantastic venue. I wish you well. I know it's going into your little bit of an off season, and then you've got your summer season. So again, hopefully the tourists come back post-COVID. You guys have a fantastic time. And thanks, and well done once again. To our listeners out there, please, if you're interested, this is such a fantastic venue. Please go to 007elements.com, simply 007elements.com, and read up, find out more, go on YouTube, and immerse yourself in this fantastic experience. And until next week, we'll catch you then.
And so that was another episode of the Doc and the Guru. Please don't forget to get a hold of us on Facebook, like us, follow us, subscribe to the podcast. And then from my side, you can get a hold of me on LinkedIn, Dr. Doug Mataz. I'm very active and very keen to hear about your views, and certainly will respond, and hopefully we can bring that into the show.
Thanks, Doc, and it's Gordon Miller, the Guru, signing off. Thank you for being with us and listening into this podcast today. You can pick up the discussion with me on my Twitter handle, @MzanziMedia, and I'd love to engage with you on any of the issues that we've taken on the show. And take us at our word. This is really going to be an open forum. There are no subjects that are taboo, and we'd love to have some of the younger, more under-listened, if that's the correct phrase, voices to join us in this discussion. Thanks for your time.
The Doc and the Guru, proudly brought to you by Infinity Media, incubating innovative businesses in the media industry.